from the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Ether yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, praise can be your most valuable asset as long as you don't aim it at yourself. Yeah. Then again, the problem is in finding a worthy target.
I knowed I made a good choice.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here it is.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Ought to be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool.
I'm excited.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
All right, here we go. And by the way, that whole thing about being quizzed, forget about it. Never going to happen. I have it on good authority, okay? All right, it was on this day in 1936. Hoover Dam began generating electricity and sending it to Los Angeles. Meanwhile, Las Vegas was screaming, "What about us? We have slot machines to power and all those lights." You'd have thought FEMA was in charge. And it was on this day in 1981, President Francois Mitterrand abolished capital punishment in France, figuring that having to live in France was punishment enough.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
I'm sure you've noticed it. You would have to have been living under a rock not to have noticed it. But the degree to which anti-Semitism within the United States is rising, shucks, let's take it from the point of view of right now, has risen and seems to be rising further, is nothing short of frightening, really. Now, does this bother me because I'm Jewish? Well, I'm not Jewish. I was raised in the Lutheran Church. Right now, I'm not a member of any organized religious group, but I still consider myself a Christian. But anti-Semitism throughout history has done nothing but create massive death. Usually it leads to war, major war. And, of course, the greatest war ever fought over anti-Semitism, although it wasn't, World War II wasn't caused by anti-Semitism necessarily. But the greatest war ever fought involving anti-Semitism was World War II. And we always hear about the 6 million Jews. And we need to keep hearing about the 6 million Jews. But what about the additional 8 million political prisoners, political opposition, gypsies, homosexuals, also killed during World War II in an organized program of genocide? And if you think that we are not on the threshold of a repeat of that god-awful war, you are deluding yourself. Now, Monday was the anniversary of the Hamas attack on Israel. And this is where these Hamas operatives, soldiers, let's call them what they are, they're soldiers. Operatives, that sounds so benign. These soldiers parachuted into the Israeli site of a concert where innocent people were just enjoying a good show, and these soldiers started indiscriminately murdering Israelis. Now, some of these Israelis were Arab. Okay? I mean, if you knew the nation of Israel, you know that it's a very diverse nation. You have Arabs and Jews living side by side, and Arabs enjoying the kinds of freedoms that Israelis enjoy. So on Monday, the anniversary, the first anniversary of the October 7th attacks, where I forgot how many people were killed, it was what, 1,500 or more people killed indiscriminately by Hamas, an organization that needs to be wiped out. And in this country that I spent 4 years of my life defending during my time in the United States Armed Forces, serving in the Air Force from 1968 to 1972, we are tolerating the anti-Semitic demonstrations. And there was an incident the other day where a pro-Israel demonstrator was beaten by five or six anti-Semites, pro-Palestinian jerks. And this is going to continue. This violence, unless our government, our administration, our presidential administration actually takes a stand against this sort of behavior, is going to rise. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. You know, we fought this war. We lost over 500,000 American soldiers in the prosecution of World War II. Of course, we fought on two fronts. But President Roosevelt believed that the greatest threat to the world was Germany. And that's where his priority was. Get Germany first, then we'll take care of Japan. And when the atrocities were finally revealed, the concentration camps, the death camps, when it was finally revealed, I mean, there were cries all over the world, never again, never again. But it's happening again, and it's happening here in the United States. Now, understand something, and it's very important that you understand this. This rise in anti-Semitism in the United States, which is big, and it's dangerous. The potential is god-awful. This rise in anti-Semitism here in the States is not organic. It's organized. And it's well-financed. And all of the people who you would assume to be the usual suspects in something like this are the very people who are the suspects. And you can start with that bastard, George Soros, and his son, Alex. This is a concentrated campaign of anti-Semitism. It's well-financed, it's well-organized, and they're throwing even more money into it. To what end, you may ask? And that's a good question. Why would they do that? Because it further divides this nation. It further creates chaos in this nation. George Soros would just love it if every city in this nation burned to the ground. You know, kind of like the summer of 2020. Oh, Soros would love that. Now, I'm not wishing anything on George Soros, at least not publicly. But what I'm trying to understand here is in this world that is infested with unprecedented evil worldwide. I mean, this may as well be the late 1930s all over again. But in this world we live with all this evil, and you get some nut job who's trying to kill Donald Trump? We live an upside down world, my friend. And it's not a comfortable place to be. But understand that this rise in anti-Semitism here in the United States is not representative of who the American people are. It is representative of the kind of evil people we allow to live in this nation, the people that we allow to have political influence, economic influence, and monetary influence, and cultural influence. The Hillary Clintons, the George Soroses, the Chuck Schumers. And Schumer should know better. He's Jewish. And I'm still stunned by the number of American Jews who still intend to vote for Kamala Harris. Like I just said, we live in upside down world, and this is not a good place. I hope you're comfortable hanging upside down. Something you may not be aware of, but it's nice to know. In a massive crackdown on violent crime, the U.S. Marshals Service, also known as the USMS, successfully arrested over 3,400 violent fugitives across 10 major metropolitan areas during the latest phase of what's called Operation North Star. I didn't even know about this operation. And it's a months-long effort aimed at curbing rising crime rates, and they refer to it as a high-impact fugitive apprehension initiative. Kind of like deportation. But it took place from May to September of this year, primarily targeting individuals wanted for offenses like homicide, sexual assault, robbery, aggravated assault, and firearms violations. And apparently there's a lot of this going on. And the operation, which was launched way back in 2022 to focus on the most dangerous offenders, saw over 200 suspects arrested on homicide charges, with hundreds more facing assault, robbery, and weapons-related offenses. And notably, law enforcement seized 534 firearms, along with large quantities of illegal drugs, including fentanyl. And, of course, that's the big devil these days in our country, is fentanyl. And it's being willfully peddled to our country with the idea in mind of killing as many Americans as they can with this. And investigators recovered 138 pounds of fentanyl and over 550,000 pills, marking a major, I guess you'd call it, victory in efforts to combat at least part of our drug crisis here. Now, how do you get rid of this kind of stuff? I mean, you can't just flush fentanyl down, I mean, because it'll get into our water supply eventually. But the 10 cities selected for the operation based on crime data, which came from the National Crime Information Center and the FBI. Again, I'm sorry, I don't trust the FBI, but apparently it's all we've got in this case right now. There were hot spots of violent crime. And they included Dallas, Baton Rouge, St. Louis, and Phoenix, among others. And each city saw a huge number of fugitives arrested, helping local law enforcement regain control in some of the nation's most crime-ridden areas. There are cities where local law enforcement is almost impotent. And among those places would be Oakland, California. Oakland is in such bad shape. All the fast food joints and a lot of the convenience stores have closed up. They just refuse to do business in Oakland anymore. But I'll give you a good example. East St. Louis. That's oh God, what an awful place. In East St. Louis alone, they had 602 fugitives apprehended, including 34 for homicide and 177 for firearms violations. Now, enter Attorney General Merrick Garland, who, I'm sorry, I can't stand the sight of that bastard, but he praised the operation's success, highlighting the collaboration between federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies as key to its effectiveness. Garland expressed his thanks to the U.S. Marshals and officers involved. But I just get the creeps knowing that our Attorney General is Merrick Garland. That lying sack of crap. But quoting him, he says, "This operation sends a clear message that we're committed to reducing violent crime and making our community safer." No, the only reason they're doing this is because it's election year. Now, since its inception, this Operation North Star has resulted in the arrest of over 10,200 fugitives, including more than 1,100 charged with homicide. And this initiative is it's part of a broader federal program or strategy to target repeat offenders and individuals responsible for driving violence in their respective communities. And, of course, now we have the influx of trendy Aragua out of Venezuela. We're having to deal with that. But the Marshals Service utilized what they called a data-driven approach, identifying areas and offenders that pose the greatest threat to public safety. Then they swoop in and make the arrests and what have you. And in addition to seizing firearms and narcotics, the operation also netted more than $500,000 in illegal proceeds. And naturally, this kind of further disrupts criminal networks At least it puts a kink in their operation. Some of these operations are just so enormously financed. And among the most notable arrests were those of four individuals in Fort Worth, linked to a drive-by shooting that injured several children, and a suspect in St. Louis wanted for opening fire at a street racing event. That resulted in the death of a 14-year-old. So, this operation, Operation North Star's success, I guess, underscores the importance of interagency collaboration. And I take a little comfort out of that, because at least, you know, when you don't trust the FBI, you at least have other law enforcement agencies that are perhaps more reputable than the FBI, and when they're all working together. I mean, the U.S. Marshals Service, I've never heard anything negative about them. So when you have these various agencies working together with a common goal, well, some good's got to come out of it, right? It really bothers me how much leftist ideology breeds more leftist ideology. It gets crazier and crazier. And at some point, the old proverbial pendulum has got to swing back our way again, back toward more common sense thinking. But for now, we have to deal with things like this, where the University of California, San Diego, has mandated that all incoming graduate students this year must take at least one course focused on climate change. Now, this new initiative, labeled the Jane Terrains Climate Change Education Requirement, has been hailed by some, of course, as an essential step toward educating the next generation about global climate challenges. But, and rightfully so, this idea has its critics. And they're arguing that this mandate is just another example of academia's growing trend toward ideological conformity. And they're using climate change as a vehicle to push this insane progressive social agenda. So UCSD officials claim the program is going to empower students from all disciplines to engage meaningfully with climate change solutions. Spoken like a real academic, isn't it? Wow. So you have this chancellor over there whose name is Pradeep Khosla. And they praised the new requirement, stating that it'll equip students across STEM, social sciences, and humanities with the skills needed to address the climate crisis. Well, we have a climate crisis now, and it has to be addressed. The only climate crisis I know of is the one where we've had enormous solar flares this year. We had a couple of them that reared its ugly head back in June. We had some more hit in August, and there's not a whole lot you can do about solar flares. The sun is going to do what it's going to do, and nobody, no amount of somebodies on Earth can do anything about it. All we can do is react. But you'd better react carefully, because if you're going to play with the weather, like Bill Gates is proposing, you know, to try to shade the sun in our atmosphere, that is twisting the dragon's tail, my friend, and you don't want to go there. But just the same, more than 40 approved courses, 40 of them. Can you imagine that? I don't think there are 40 courses in electrical engineering, but you have more than 40 approved courses, including offerings like climate justice and gender and climate justice, that are designed to meet this UCSD requirement. But thank God for detractors and critics. Thank God they're out there, because they're questioning whether these courses emphasize practical climate science or just veer too far into political territory. Well, of course, it's veering way too far into political territory, because our universities these days, if I had to send kids to college today, I wouldn't. I would tell them, look, you have your choice. You can go to community college, you can go to trade school, or you can go into the military. But you're not going to go to the University of Texas. You're not going to go to even Texas A&M is becoming crazy. Most state supported schools have just gone nuts with this left wing academia crap, and I will not support it. I just won't. My son David, he's not giving a red cent to any of the alumni programs over at the University of Houston. And I don't blame him. Just shows you how smart the kid is. But detractors are questioning whether these courses, any of these courses, emphasize practical climate science or just veer into this big territory of politics. And when we talk politics, from the standpoint of academia, we're talking about left-wing politics, right? I mean, this is where the censorship stuff that we talked about in yesterday's blogcast is coming from. It's coming from the halls of academia. So skeptics are seeing this as part of a larger trend within higher education to integrate environmentalism with social justice, potentially, of course, at the expense of objective scientific learning. And we, the taxpayers, need to say no. Now, the requirement is modeled after UCSD's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Requirement, you know, DEI, which some critics have also been labeling as more about indoctrination than education. Thank God these critics are so vocal. Thank God. Now, the climate program shares a similar interdisciplinary approach. And students can satisfy the mandate by taking courses that tackle climate change through various lenses. You get scientific, political, or cultural, I guess whatever punches their ticket. While the university touts this as necessary to provide a well-rounded understanding of climate issues, and opponents argue that it reflects the growing politicization of environmental topics within academia. See? So, you know, it always comes around to the same damn thing, political indoctrination, but it's always left-wing political indoctrination. And some faculty members and outside commentators have been expressing concerns, believe it or not, that this kind of mandatory course could stifle intellectual diversity. Gee, remember what happened in the medical community and the academic community during the COVID-19 plandemic lockdown? Remember that? How certain important and credible voices were silenced. People lost their jobs, lost their careers over this. And we always kowtow to the left. And they argue that while climate change is a pressing issue, requiring students to take classes with specific ideological frameworks, especially those combining climate science with social justice, like Indigenous Approaches to Climate Change. How about that for a course title? Indigenous Approaches to Climate Change. Well, critics are arguing this could lead to one-sided perspectives, the mixing of science with progressive policy agendas, and that leads some to accuse universities of pushing students toward activism rather than fostering critical thinking. How about fostering knowledge instead? Knowledge and critical thinking. Here again, I go back to the solar flares. Everybody's panicking. We got all these Chicken Littles running around here on planet Earth. Oh, climate's changing. It's because of cow farts. It's because of automobiles and diesel trucks and trains and airplanes. Bullcorn. I'm calling bullcorn on all of it. I am a self-educated man. I don't have any degrees. I like to think of myself as someone akin to a Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk dropped out of college. I dropped out of college after 2 years. And then I spent 4 years in the Air Force. I learned a couple of things in the Air Force, believe you me. Before you even get your first job in the military, you have to go through at least a year of technical schooling. And it just bothers me how the scientific community, the so-called scientific community, won't zero in on solar activity as the chief driver of our climate so-called problems here on planet Earth. Now, San Diego itself is aggressively pursuing environmental goals. The city of San Diego, yes. The city's climate action plan aims for net zero emissions by 2035. But then again, we're talking about California, and they're all insane in California. That state, the entire state now, is completely uninhabitable, by certainly by any critical thinking people. And so now the city of San Diego has these ambitious measures that are targeting everything from transportation to energy consumption. And while these goals may, in some circles, seem laudable, skeptics like myself are trying to point out the potential economic impact of policies like this. And when it comes to economic impact, who are the people who are hurt first and foremost and hurt the most? The middle class and the poor. So, you got some people actually arguing that focusing so heavily on this emission bullcorn and focusing on renewable energy that is still a technology that has a long way to go before it's practical. Renewable energy is not practical. So, you have these people, these critics saying that, you know, focusing so heavily on emissions reductions and renewable energy are actually going to force the ignoring of more immediate and pressing urban challenges. Homelessness, for one. And, of course, decay of infrastructure. When you got all this money going to a technology that's bullcorn, like EVs, for instance. So the mandatory climate change courses at UCSD are just the latest in a series of educational reforms aimed at addressing what progressives view as the climate emergency. And under Biden's American Climate Corps, you have similar programs being expanded across the country aimed at training young people in climate-related fields. And when I look at stuff like this, all I see are a bunch of marching Soviet soldiers marching to Joseph Stalin's cadence. Hey, it's really creepy, isn't it? Let's get on over to the Comedy Corner stat with Joe Larson.
I've had a very exciting year this year. This is what I did recently. You know what I did recently? I went skydiving, which was awesome. Yeah. I went with that guy right over there. Me and him. We have the same haircut. You have that haircut to go skydiving. It's the law. I went skydiving. I went tandem, where they strap you to the dude, which was not my first choice. I wanted to go alone the first time, but it turns out the first time they don't let you go alone. They don't let you go alone because they figure you won't pull the chute in time, which is ridiculous. You know, plummeting to the earth at 125 miles an hour. I'm not the most punctual of people, but I'm going to be on time for that one, you know? I don't think I'll be late for that appointment. I'll probably be early. I'll probably pull the chute in the plane. I'm sorry. We're still in the van. How'd you even get a parachute? I don't know. I'm scared. I chose tandem because when you go static, the other choice, you have to take an 8-hour class, and I went to community college, so that sucked. Don't mean to brag. Thank you. I did go to community college. I didn't graduate because you don't. Yeah, you just go for like 5 years, and then one day you look in the mirror and go, who are we kidding? It's community college. It's not really college. It's more of a holding place until your parents realize maybe we didn't birth a winner. Pretty sure I was always headed down that path, you know. I was never one of those kids who heard, oh, there goes my little astronaut, or there goes the next president of the United States. My parents were more like, you're such a good eater. Yes. weird little kid. This little kid actually thought I had a superpower. I was convinced for 3 years that I had a real-life superpower. It turned out to be a lazy eye, which was not that super, you know, just kind of creepy. Well, it was a little super. My parents never worried when I was crossing the street because I was already looking both ways. So it was less of a defect, more of a safety feature, really. You know. Look what ours came with, the deluxe model. I don't... Lazy eye is kind of a rude term, if you ask me. It's the only medical condition where the doctor just blames that it's a lazy eye. They blame the patient. You never see that with any other medical condition. You don't need that wheelchair, lazy legs. Come on, buddy, just gotta try harder. What do you do with that respirator, lazy lungs? Come on, put some hair on your chest.
Make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you'd be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.